From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. The Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Olive Kittredge, Elizabeth Strout, joins us in studio to discuss her newest book, My Name is Lucy Barton, a lucid meditation on the family ties that bind us long after we leave home. And at 10:30...
Waiting, seeking, striving, longing, yearning.
We talk to Taylor Mack, who's producing 24 touring programs that celebrate the last 24 decades of popular music in America. A decade an hour, performed in extravagant drag. Ambitious much? That's all coming up in this hour of Forum. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Rachel Miro in for Michael Krasny. We never do leave the past behind when we grow up. We keep turning over the events and experiences in our mind, even though what it all means changes with time. In Elizabeth Strout's latest book, My Name is Lucy Barton, the title character is laid low in the hospital, giving her the chance to reflect on the poverty of her childhood and the ways it shaped her adult life. It's a great read. Can't recommend it highly enough. And we have Elizabeth Strout in studio here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
Well, as I said, I mean, I don't even think I knew I was reading the book. I just started and then suddenly I was done.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Was there a moment when you first envisioned this novel? You know, did Lucy speak to you one day in a taxi, in the shower, in a bookstore?
It's a good question. Actually, she didn't. She took me by surprise in the sense that whenever I start new work, I write little sketches or pieces of drafts, just small scenes, and I have many of them, and I push them around the desk. And there were other things that I was working on that I thought would be probably where I'd go, but I sketched a few things about Lucy and the mother in the hospital and, you know, didn't pay too much attention. And then I realized that I kept picking them up. And I know from experience that if I keep picking them up, there's a reason. And so eventually I had to pay attention to her, but I was surprised. And then it was her voice, I think, that took hold of me, the tone of her voice.
How would you describe it for people who haven't picked up the book yet?
Well, it's very particular. It's very almost distilled, I think. It's very, very plain spoken, very honest and simple. In a certain way,
she's a quiet woman.
She's a quiet woman,
yeah.
And she says what she thinks, and she says it straightforwardly and without a lot of extra words.
You know, many authors describe the process of writing a novel as a time when you're living with these characters. Mm-hmm. They're talking in your head. They're telling you things. They want the story to mm-hmm. go a certain way. What was it like living with Lucy Barton, and what did you want to find out from her?
Right. Well, Lucy, she really, really grew on me, obviously, as, you know, from the first, my trying to shove her off the desk, you know, she became very close to my heart. And I think that I was very, very interested in class. You know, she starts out in such a rural, poverty-stricken background and crosses class lines. And, you know, that whole American thing about reinventing oneself. And she ends up arguably an upper middle class woman in New York City. And so that was very, very interesting to me, what that would be like for this particular person.
I loved all the little details, like how she grew up eating molasses on bread.
Right.
That her
right.
middle class husband couldn't imagine how small her house
yeah.
really was, the one she grew
yeah.
up in.
Yeah.
And, you know, it strikes me, especially in a day and an age when we talk about systemic racism and the way that people have these internalized prejudices, there are a lot of people walking around on the street who hold these wellsprings of alienation that are invisible to other people.
Exactly.
People don't know this about Lucy Barton.
Exactly. You're exactly right. And I think that poverty is something that alienates one as much as any other thing. And, I mean, real poverty, tremendous poverty. And I think that in rural areas particularly, and I'm sure it's much more so now, there's always one family that's so poor they can't even join the community they live in. And that's so heartbreaking to me. I remember in third grade, there was a boy, and he was of that kind of family, and he was so poor, he had no friends. And the teacher said to him, he sat right in front of me, and the teacher said to him, "You have dirt behind your ears. Nobody's too poor to buy a bar of soap." And that kid just turned bright red, and I always remember what a horrible thing for her to say. And so I think, you know, that's always haunted me. And there are those families. They're just left out because they're poor.
One of the things I was most emotionally affected by was throughout the book there, you know, Lucy's a very quiet, polite person.
Yeah.
But she has these huge surges of emotion, two different kinds of points. One, if she sees somebody being cruel and judgmental and shaming someone else, mm-hmm. she gets very angry
right.
on the victim's behalf.
Right.
And conversely, if somebody is kind, if they're thoughtful, if they reach out when they don't have to, she just surges with love for that person.
Yes, you've got it exactly right on both points. And obviously, I think that, you know, she was so used to being demeaned from such a young age, from her earliest memory, that it still stings. It just stings. And she's so happy when people are loving. And I think of her as loving as well. But yes, you're absolutely right. That those are the two sides of her very much so. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to hog the conversation here, and we only have a few minutes with you, so I'm going to throw out the phone number. Call us at 866-733-6786 with your questions for author Elizabeth Strout. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, tweet to @KQEDForum. We're monitoring our Facebook page and our webpage as well. You know, Lucy Barton is such a 180-degree turn from Olive Kittredge, the collection mm-hmm. of short yep. stories you won a Pulitzer Prize for. Did you want to find somebody who was a little easier to take than Olive Kittredge?
You know, it was not a conscious decision. I don't sit around making conscious decisions as a writer. It's funny, until the very end, and then I have to decide, okay, well, this needs to go here or that needs to go there. Those are conscious decisions, but I don't work that way. So I wasn't consciously trying to find a different character.
You know, it's not often that an author gets to see a collection of short stories made into an HBO miniseries.
Right.
And, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, how blessed you were to get
yes.
Frances McDormand
yep,
in the title role.
Unbelievable.
Do you now see Frances McDormand when you see Olive Kittredge, or are there really two women in there?
You know, it's a very good question, because part of me does see Frances. And she was just fabulous. And a part of me still sees the Olive that I had envisioned myself. And I'm not saying that they walk side by side, but there are two images in my head now.
What did Frances do with the part that surprised you or even offended?
Oh, she brought it to life. I mean, she just brought it to life. It was right there on the screen. And she was just absolutely wonderful. I mean, you know, lying down on that bed in on her son's wedding bed, you know, and lying there and looking at that little girl. And I mean, she's just absolutely fabulous. It was great. Just great.
There's a wonderful scene in My Name is Lucy Barton where her neighbor Jeremy mm-hmm. tells Lucy, "Artists must be ruthless." And it's just such an odd thing to say to a woman like Lucy Barton. I mean, he
yeah.
might as well be urging her to seek out someone to murder.
Yeah.
You know, it's such an outsized, romantic 19th
right.
century vision of what
right.
an artist is. And I was kind of curious whether you could side with Jeremy or side with Lucy on this one. Do artists have to be ruthless?
You know, it's funny. It's not ruthless is not a word I would use. That was Jeremy's word. And Jeremy, you know, he is originally from France. He's a little bit older. He works with artists and he sees her as an artist. And he's telling her, "Lucy, you're going to have to be ruthless," you know, because he believes in her and wants to give her advice. And so that was Jeremy's word. I just don't think it would be my word, That said, I understand what Jeremy means.
Do you feel like you have to be ruthless?
I don't think that I have to be ruthless, but I think that I have to be dedicated, absolutely dedicated to my work, because it's what I do. It's my vocation. And so I think that I have to, you know, arrange my life around that.
There is a stereotype of writers, you know, alcoholic, abusive to other people in their lives, you know. And there is a kind of belief, if you will, that this is somehow required if you're going to write colorful work.
Right. Well, I don't see that many people, so hopefully I'm not too abusive toward them.
No, there is abuse that's kind of hinted at in the book, and I hate to ask, you know, say a poet to deconstruct a poem.
Right.
We never really get a clear sense of whether Lucy was just verbally abused as a child, you know, surrounded perhaps by people who were desperately depressed as well as poor. Mm-hmm. Or if it was something else, something bigger, something more. Do you want us to be unsure?
I think the thumbprints are there. That's how I envisioned it. I thought, you know, I'm just going to put a thumbprint on the canvas. And I just didn't feel that Lucy, who tells the story, was a person who would be interested in pressing somebody's face right into it. And so there are just different clues and thumbprints around. So that the reader can imagine what they want to or need to.
I'm going to give out the number again, 866-733-6786. What questions do you have for novelist Elizabeth Strout? 866-733-6786. You can, of course, email, tweet, Facebook post. We do it all. You're going to be at Kepler's Books tonight in Menlo Park at 7:30, right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. What kind of response have you seen to this book?
It's been a very good response, quite a startlingly good response to this book so far in places that I've been.
Do you feel like winning the Pulitzer Prize and the HBO series helped pack the audience a bit?
You know, it probably did. I don't really know. I honestly don't know much about book marketing or I just don't know. But it would have had to have helped, I imagine, you know. I just keep my head down, basically. I just try and do my work, and every so often I show up. Hello.
What did you do before you became a professional writer?
Well, I always was a writer. I always thought of myself as a writer from a very, very, very young age. I mean, my mother gave me notebooks when I was probably 4 or 5 years old, and she'd say, write down what you did today. So I did, and I always thought I was a writer, and she told me I was a writer, and I thought, okay. So I always thought I was a writer, but when I left college, I realized that nobody was interested in my being a writer. You know, I couldn't get a nibble from any of the places that I sent my stories to. So I was, I had many jobs. I was a cocktail waitress. I was a regular waitress. I was a secretary in all sorts of different places. And then I finally went to law school after a few years because I thought, well, I had a thought that if I was 58 years old, that's how in my mind I thought, well, if I'm 58 years old and I'm a cocktail waitress and I haven't published anything, that will be really depressing. That's what I thought. So I went to law school and I dropped out and I went back and I failed the bar and I passed the bar and then I was a lawyer for 6 months. And I was such a terrible lawyer. I was a terrible, terrible lawyer. And I came home one day and I remember thinking, well, I can either be a terrible lawyer for the rest of my life or else I could really try and go for it with my work. I can just really try and go for it. And at that point, it seemed that if I was 58 years old and a cocktail waitress, unpublished, it would be a life of dignity that I would have led. So that was a very important moment for me.
It's beautifully put. We've got some calls. I want to talk to Andrew in San Francisco.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I have not read the book, but it's very interesting to me. I'm a 40-something-year-old white male, and I'm so interested in the perspective of this Lucy Barton, a female, and I don't know if Lucy telling the story is an adult or is telling the story of her childhood. What sounds interesting to me is that from the discussion, it sounds as though Lucy is not presumptuous. And what we're hearing so much in political discussion and everything that's all over the news now, there's so many people telling us what will be done, what they will do And they seem to want us to think they have all of the answers. And the idea of someone who has sort of figured things out and how to do things with a sense of kindness and genuineness sounds really refreshing and appealing to me.
Well, great. That's wonderful. Thank you so much. You know, Lucy tells the story from an older woman's point of view, and it's sort of retrospective. It goes back to when she's in her young 30s and she's in the hospital with her mother. And then it, you know, goes back even further every so often so that we know what she came from. And then it follows her life throughout, you know, until not the end of her life, obviously, but the end of the book. And you know, you're right. Lucy's just Lucy. It's just a story of Lucy, and she's certainly gone through things. And I don't feel that Lucy has an agenda. I don't feel that there's any particular thing. She's not finger wagging. She's just saying, this is my story.
Thank you so much, Andrew. Let's turn now to Liz in San Francisco.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I haven't read the book yet, but I plan to. It sounds fantastic. My question is, I'm wondering if you feel that you've been influenced by other writers in your writing, and if yes, who would those writers be?
Right. I have very, very much been influenced by men, you know, just about everybody I read, but Alice Munro had a huge influence on me for many, many years. She brings such authority to the page, and William Trevor was another person. I adored his writing. He's very gentle, and yet he's very, very succinct, can turn a phrase quickly. I love Fitzgerald. I love Hemingway. I love D.H. Lawrence, Virginia Woolf, the Russians. I've read the Russians over and over. I keep, you know, returning to the classics. So, but certainly Alice Munro and William Trevor were very, very, very important to me. Philip Roth, John Updike, John Cheever.
You've been asked this question before. Liz, I'm curious, have you read other books by Elizabeth Strout?
Yes, of course. I read and loved Olive Kitteridge. Loved it.
Now, who do you think, whose influences do you see in her writing?
Oh, well, I suppose it's been a while since I read that book, so I'd be making something up, which is probably why I asked the question. But it just warms my heart to hear all the authors that she mentioned, because it just kind of underscores the point that all of these people are worth reading and we should read them.
Yeah.
And by reading them, it makes us, not all of us, but it makes us better writers.
Right. I think so. Oh, absolutely. If you read good sentences, you will write a better sentence.
Beautifully put. Pamela writes, I finished Elizabeth Strout's Burgess Boys minutes before you started the interview. Just for me, thanks. Great writing. It moved me a lot.
Oh, that's lovely. I'm so, so glad. Thank you.
You know, I kind of wonder, Olive Kitteridge was so steeped in the culture of Maine, you know, and obviously as are you. But you've been living in New York now for what?
32 years.
32 years. Yes. How has that shaped your view of the world?
Well, you know, I think there's always been a lag time for me in terms of how long I've lived in a place and then how long it takes me to be able to write about it. And I've often thought the lag time was about 15 years, give or take. And so I did with the Burgess Boys, which I started to write probably 7 or 8 years ago, maybe even longer that I started that book, actually. I did start to write pieces of that in New York City because I felt that I had finally lived in New York long enough that it was, you know, in my bones. I wasn't just perched there. You know, I wasn't just like sort of sitting on the sidewalk going, oh my goodness, look at all this. You know, it had become something inside me. And so I could write about that. But for many years, I did turn back to New Hampshire or to Maine, particularly Maine. And I think it's because there was probably a low-level homesickness going on, and also because that was very much my DNA.
People also talk, though, about a relationship, a mental relationship that develops when you move away from the place you love. Like James Joyce, writing about Ireland when he wasn't
there
anymore.
You're exactly right. Because when I was sitting in Maine, you know, I couldn't see it in that sense. And then I moved to such a different place and I can turn around and see it more clearly. Yes.
And describe it for others.
Yeah.
Andrew writes, I'd like to know, given how nuanced and appropriate your take on the world is in your writing, What do you consider the human condition?
Well, yes. I think that, you know, honestly, I think, well, boy, these are hard days to talk about this one, but I do still think mostly people are trying to do the best they can. That's my experience, that the person on the street is just trying to do the best they can. And I think that has to be respected. And I do respect that. And I think that there are awful things that are happening now, but there have always been awful things that are happening. And I continue to think there's always a contest. There's a contest between good and evil, always. And the reality of both is clear. And yet I've noticed in my work that there's a redemptive quality, that I always come up believing in the redemption, that love is redemptive. And I do. And then I figured it out. I thought, well, that's because I do think that. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good. I'm not lying. So I think it's hard. I think we all have a hard job out here, but I think we're trying the best we can.
You know, just one last question back to My Name is Lucy Barton. I mean, I guess what really struck me about this character, this woman, is how lonely she is. Do you feel she gets to find some kind of redemption, perhaps outside the confines of the book?
I do. I think that Lucy, she does. She particularly starts with a loneliness, and she's very open about that when she's sitting with Jeremy and she realizes that he recognizes it in her before she does. So I think there is that sense of loneliness in Lucy that in some ways she'll probably never shake. And yet she is a loving person. And I think that she has her daughter. She has her husband. You know, she has her friends. I'm not entirely sure that in the end she's that much more lonely than other people, really. They may not know it, though.
She really is just like the rest of us.
Well, I think so, in the sense that we all carry something from our past.
Well, the book is My Name is Lucy Barton. The author is Elizabeth Strout. Thank you so much for being here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
And you can see Elizabeth Strout in person as well if you show up at Kepler's Books in Menlo Park at 7:30 tonight. And continue the conversation on Twitter, Facebook, our webpage. We're interested in your thoughts about Elizabeth Strout. You've been listening to Forum on KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Myra.